Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Brian Stelter got canceled, the Inflation Reduction Act is being pushed, and Liz Cheney has lost it. Hey, it's the Chicks from the Chicks on the Right podcast. Download and subscribe to our daily podcast to hear us pick apart and pick on the news of the day. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, today's podcast is sponsored by AMAC, the only conservative alternative to that other group. Join today at amac.us/Carter. That's amac.us/Carter. Today, I'm going to be joined by Keelan Darby. She is the wife of the wrongfully imprisoned police officer. Probably a lot of you don't know this, Ben Darby from Alabama. We'll break down the details of this case, his case, and how it relates to the consistent attacks on police, Border Patrol agents, ICE, and other law enforcement agencies from the radical left. And his conviction came at a heightened time when everybody was targeting police officers and law enforcement after George Floyd. So this is very, very important. You need to hear this story because she is also a police officer. And right now, this case is on appeal, and she's going to go into details on how you can help support her husband and other police officers, because this isn't just about him. It's about all of us. I'll also share a video of a Democratic state primary winner boldly announcing, listen to this, that socialism wins. Socialism wins. That is what this Democrat is saying. So folks, don't be fooled. The radical left is out there. They are on a mission. They have an ideology. They want to change our country fundamentally. And if we're not awake, if we stay asleep at the wheel, we won't even know what country we're in when we wake up. And we do not want that to happen. I promise you, you don't want to go anywhere. Hey, everyone, please follow and subscribe. I'd like you to get all the links at sarahacarter.com. That is sarahacarter.com. And while you're there, sign up for our email list so that you don't get shadow banned. Folks, I talk a lot about Mike Lindell and how patriotic he is and his company, MyPillow. I also talk a lot about how great his products are. His products are fantastic. From the dog bed that's underneath my desk right now where my little Chihuahua is sleeping on, to the big dog beds in our house for my husband's guide dog, to the MyPillow bed sheets and the pillows and everything else. Well, right now, MyPillow Percal bed sheets are still on a huge sale. Huge sale. Queen size regular price, $89.98. Now only $39.98. You just can't beat that. But you got to use the promo code Carter. You got to use the promo code Carter. Go to mypillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221 for deep discounts on the MyPillow Percal bed sheets. Queen size regular. Listen to this, $89.98. Right now, you can get it for $39.98. You just can't beat that. And while you're there, take advantage of the buy one, get one free sale on all my pillows, towels, and so much more. Visit mypillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221 today for the sale of the year on MyPillow Percal bed sheets. mypillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221. So I want to get right into Keelan's story and that of her husband, Ben Darby. So we're not going to spend much time here in the monologue because I think her story is so important that I want you to hear all of it. I want to give the time to her. I want to give the time to her husband. That's how important it is. But before we get there, I want to talk to you a little bit about a project that we're all working on. It's my nonprofit, The Dark Wire, an investigation foundation, as well as Radio America. We're putting together this massive project on information warfare. And part of that project deals with the border. And if any of you were watching Sean Hannity this week, you would have seen some of that. We're teasing a little bit here on Fox. It was an interview that I had with a human trafficker and smuggler in El Salvador. And I got to tell you, it was one of the toughest interviews that I've ever done because the information that he was giving me was so disturbing and so horrific about what happens to young children on this journey, you know, from traveling through multiple nations, being trafficked to the United States, or being taken before they even reach the United States by some of the most horrible, demonic-like people that you can imagine. Listen to this clip. This is just a little taste of what I was able to uncover.
Por favor, tu nombre?
Carlos.
Carlos. What do you do for a living?
I am the guy who takes people to the U.S., immigrants, to be exact.
What made you decide to become a trafficker?
It was a favor that I did to some of my family. I liked to take the risk of doing it, and I knew that people would get a lot of money out of it. Due to the fact that we are an organization that takes people to the United States, there are people destined to take care of the children. We have around 4 to 5 people along the journey that are going to take care of them. But also sometimes we ask the other people that we're taking to the States, let's say adults, to take care of the child until they get to a certain point.
If a child is harmed by one of those adults, does that adult face any kind of retribution from the organization, or do you not even know once they get past El Salvador?
Tiene culpa.
Start the journey, we tell them all the risks that are involved. So yeah, we take it as something that happened in the journey. We are not responsible of it.
He went on further to talk about how children were taken by cartels based on the way they look. So if somebody, for example, wanted a child that was blonde or a child that was dark-haired with light eyes or a child with dark hair and dark eyes or whatever kind of child, a Asian child or somebody else that was on that journey, that in many cases, if the money was right, the cartels would take those children and give them to whoever for whatever purposes that person was using them. Many times these children travel alone. As you know, this year we are expecting more than 170,000 unaccompanied minors coming into the United States. And that's children that do not have any guardian with them. So I want you to think about all the children that never make it to that border. The children that he said, and the reason why he spoke to me, are taken by people who are willing to kill them to sell their organs or willing to sell them to pedophiles and make money off of them and all the other horrific, horrific circumstances that a poor, innocent child could face. And you know, when you hear something like this, and I, you know, when I hear things like this on my journeys, I remember even in Afghanistan, when I was in the eastern part of Afghanistan, I spoke with a source that was telling me that children in the orphanage near Jalalabad, maybe you guys know it as J-Bad, that's where the whole operation took place to take down bin Laden in Pakistan. It was at J-Bad, one of our bases there. But Jalalabad's actually the area where this orphanage was. And I remember hearing stories about children being sold by the judges there to high buyers in the Middle East and others who had very nefarious purposes for children that they were purchasing. And I think the worst part of it is when I do stories like this and I meet people like this and I hear these stories through my investigation and I wonder, what can we do? How do we stop it? Who do we go to? You know, and your heart just breaks at night. You think about it and you're just like, you know, those children are out there. You know, they're suffering at the hands of these monsters. And you're hoping that by exposing it, at least I'm hoping that by exposing it, that maybe something will happen to stop it, that maybe somebody will have the power to target these people, that Maybe sometimes, even in my wildest fantasies, I wish there was a Punisher out there, because if there was the Punisher, they would go after these horrible human beings that are part of these cartels and these adults who buy children and who are sick and twisted in their minds, and just remove them from the planet. I know it sounds harsh, but I that's what I wish, because I can't imagine the suffering that happens. I can't imagine it. So I'm just hoping that by exposing this, and us exposing this in the future, and hopefully you all, I know you will want to hear these episodes that we're putting together. This is a docuseries on information warfare and the truth. We're getting the truth out to you, whether that takes me into the darkest places of El Salvador and Guatemala and other areas of the world, to the truth about what happens with people when they are trafficked in the United States or China inside our country, and the actions being taken by our most, I think, our most deadly adversaries, and what's happening in those cases and what's happening on Capitol Hill. I want to be able to bring you those stories in as raw detail as possible, because I do believe in the American people, and I believe in the fact that we can make our own decisions. I truly believe in how our nation was established, and that if we are given access to the accurate information, if we are not censored, if we are allowed to speak freely, then we will make the best decisions for our country and get rid of those people that are not worth sitting in office. We do it at the ballot box, and we do it by voting them out. And so the reason why we're doing this docuseries podcast is to get the right information to you and allow you to make the most informed decisions about who should be representing you and about the issues that affect all of us the most.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
First of all, Keelan, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I know this is a tough story for you, but one that has to be told, and I hope this makes a big difference. Your husband is Ben Darby, of Huntsville, Alabama, police officer who was sentenced to 25 years in prison for a 2018 incident that involved an armed man attempting suicide by cop. And what you and your family has been through since then has been unbelievable to me. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Sarah. It's an honor just to be on the show and be able to tell his story.
Oh, I'm sure. And this is, you know, just so everyone out there, you know, a lot of people know this about me. This is a very important issue for me, especially, you know, coming from a family, military family, and my husband being wounded in Afghanistan and serving his nation, and, you know, and your husband serving our nation as a police officer, doing his duty and having this happen to him. It's a very big focus in my career. I've worked with other law enforcement officials who have gone through similar issues, and I hope that by you continuing to tell your story, that it will make a difference in your life and the lives of others. I want you to walk everyone through the incident, share some of the situation that led to this event, and just give us the basic facts about the case.
Yeah, so Ben was a Huntsville police officer. I guess I'll backtrack a little bit. We got married in 2016 and we both became cops in 2016 for separate departments. Hit the road at the same time. We're cut loose as solo officers, and we were loving life, being newlyweds, and being police officers. And in 2018, about a year and a half after we both started, he answered a call for service for Huntsville Police Department. And the dispatcher got over the radio and sent two units to a call involving Jeff Parker. And Mr. Parker had called dispatch and said, "I'm fixing to blow my brains out. The front door's open," and hung up. And the dispatcher tried to get him help before he hung up. And Jeff said, "No, I'm good." So dispatch sent two officers, Officer Pegues, a female, Officer Beckles, a male. And Officer Beckles got on the radio and said, "If there's anyone else available, please be en route." And so Ben was available. He wasn't on a call. So he dispatched himself to that call. And police officers nationwide are trained in, when you deal with a person who has a gun inside their own house or inside a building, you don't go into that structure. You call them out of the house and you set up a perimeter. And so Ben had that in his mind because that's how they're trained. That's how we're trained as law enforcement. And so he gets to the call and he grabs his shotgun because in his mind and due to training, a shotgun is better to have on a perimeter for a distant shot if one had to be taken than a pistol. And so Ben gets his shotgun out and realizes that neither of the two officers are outside. He doesn't know where they are because he can't see them. So he gets up to the house and to his surprise, he sees Officer Pegues inside the house with no cover, no concealment, meaning there's nothing between her and Parker that will stop a bullet if a bullet is shot. And then Officer Beckles is outside the house inside the doorway, which is considered a fatal funnel because you can't move. If something were to happen, you're stuck. You know, you can only go forward or backward. And so Ben also sees Officer Pegues not pointing her pistol at Mr. Parker, who has a gun to his head. And they're about 20, 21 feet away from each other. And she has a direct threat in front of her with no cover to herself. She's not defending herself at all. And Ben tells her, point your gun at him. He can shoot you. And he yells out, you know, "Drop the gun, drop the gun." And you can see, if you look at all three body camera footages, you can see her talking to him with her hand. And then her gun is pointed down at the ground against her leg. And so Ben enters the house with his shotgun, gets up on Mr. Parker and tells him to drop the gun. And Parker says no. And Parker's like this the whole time. And Ben says, "I'm not going to tell you again, drop the gun." And Parker said, "No, I'm not going to do it." And Ben saw Parker shrug his shoulders, moving the gun forward, which is a furtive movement. The gun is now coming towards Ben and the other two officers. And Ben defended his life and the other two officers' lives that day. It went over the radio, shots fired. Everyone from the department, you know, headed over there. I was working that night. And so Ben had called me. I had no idea. Ben had called me. I was on the way to an alarm call. And he said, "Hey, if you hear anything about me, just know that I'm okay." And I said, "Okay, did you get in a car wreck? Like, can you give me more than that?" And he said, "I got to go to the hospital, but know that I'm okay." And he said, "I love you. I got to go." And so he hung up. And I knew he got in a shooting because there's no other reason for him to go to the hospital. If he said he was okay, I knew he wasn't injured. You know, he would have told me that. And so I got off shift that night and went home and waited for him to get home. And he walked in the door and you could tell he was tired and something was weighing on him, you know, obviously because he just had to use force. And I said, "Are you okay?" He said, "Yeah." I said, do you want to talk about it?" And he said, "No." And I said, "Okay." And we ate and went to bed. And that was April of 2018. Huntsville Police Department had an incident review board. So all three officers were pulled off the street. And during that time, it was investigated to see if it was a proper shoot, if it was within policy. And the incident review board consisted of Huntsville Police Department personnel, the Madison County District Attorney's Office, including the District Attorney and the Chief Prosecutor who prosecuted my husband, officials from City Legal, and then regular citizens. And they all heard their testimony, looked at everything that happened, and everyone agreed without question that Ben did exactly as he was trained and was found within policy and was justified for using the force that he used. The other two officers were found in direct violation of policy and training, and they were sent to remedial training. Ben was not sent to remedial training. So they go through that. They get sent back to the street. There's discussions between the district attorney's office and Huntsville Police Chief Mark McMurray. And the DA's office says, if you fire him, we won't press charges. And the chief said, no, he didn't do anything wrong. And furthermore, all those subjects were involved in the incident review board that cleared Ben. So now he's trying to bring charges against Ben by saying, if you just fire him, we won't press charges. The chief stood his ground. The chief stood his ground. And August of 2018, Ben was charged with murder. They had a grand jury. They had a grand jury indict him, and which is not that hard. If you talk to police officers, it's not hard to get a grand jury indictment. And so he was formally arrested, bonded in and out of Madison County Jail. And then we waited, you know, to figure out, well, what's next? The city supported Ben from the very beginning. During a press conference after he was arrested, the chief and the mayor of Huntsville both stated that Ben was not a murderer. To quote Chief McMurray, he said, Ben Darby is not a murderer, and we will handle the situation. The mayor supported him, and the city council supported him so much as that they paid for his initial trial, which was over $125,000. The city backed Ben Darby. We go to 2021, fast forward, because of COVID and just issues with, it does take a while for stuff to go through the legal system. And so January of 2021, the district attorney's office made a deal and or tried to make a deal. And they said, if you plead to aggravated manslaughter, you have no prison time, 5 years probation. So you won't have to go to jail. You'll still have a felon on your record. You won't be able to be a cop anymore, but you won't have to go to jail for it. And Ben said, no, I didn't commit murder and I didn't commit manslaughter. I'm not taking a deal. So we go to trial May of 2021. And there was issues from the very beginning. Ben was not allowed his Sixth Amendment constitutional right to a public trial, meaning that no one was allowed to go into the courtroom, including myself. His wife was not allowed to support him and stand with him while he was tried. It was completely closed off. The media wasn't allowed inside. So we were all ushered to a side room and we watched the trial via Zoom feed. The issue with that is the judge would periodically, without warning or without reason, turn the feed off, in essence, closing the trial and not making public. During those times.
What? I want to ask you that there's a lot of things that I wanted to stop and talk about, but I'll do it after you tell your story. But the judge was turning the feed off. Yeah. Why was the judge doing that?
Because she didn't want the testimony that was being given to be heard by the public. The jury wasn't allowed to hear it either, because I asked, the first time it happened was with a neighbor of Mr. Parker, and they were side by side neighbors, and he had had several conversations with Parker while they were cutting the yard or whatever. And Parker told this neighbor that he hated cops, he didn't like them, and that he had a plan to get an officer to come in his house and to kill a cop. That's a direct, like what we're having right now, Sarah, is direct witness testimony. It's a direct conversation. If one of your viewers were to talk about this conversation I'm having with you, that would be hearsay, because neither of us are giving the account of the conversation. So when the neighbor got up to testify, our lawyer started questioning him and said, what did Mr. Parker tell you about how he felt about police officers? And the neighbor was able to say, he told me he hated cops. And the prosecution, objection, objection, that's hearsay. Well, no, it's not. And the judge said, yeah, that's hearsay, I'm not allowing it. So she sent the jury out of the room. Now, this is all according to Ben, because this is when the TV turned off. She sent the jury out of the room, and the neighbor was allowed to speak to the court reporter, and give his testimony. That testimony, though, wasn't allowed to be heard by the jury. So it's on the court record. If and when we had to go to an appeal, which is where we're at currently, the judges can see what that testimony was. But the 12 people that decided that week if Ben was guilty of murder or not wasn't allowed to hear it.
And they weren't allowed to hear that testimony. Being a police officer yourself, I want you to describe the people that are listening right now how dangerous domestic calls are, because I don't think people realize how deadly for a police officer it is to go to a call where there's either somebody who has a weapon that is claiming they're going to commit suicide or wants suicide by cop, or if you go to a situation where, you know, there's domestic violence and there could be a weapon, you have no idea at hand. I mean, this is one of the most dangerous calls that a police officer can end up at, right?
Absolutely. You know, a suicide call, 9 times out of 10, there's a weapon involved. And there was when Ben went to this call with Parker. He said, "I have a gun. I'm going to blow my brains out. The front door is open." That right there screams ambush and screams, this is a red flag situation. What people don't understand is every call that we go to is different. No call is the same. You cannot replicate a call in its entirety every single time. You can get really close, but you're not going to get it 100% of the time. And so, you know, and that your question leads into another witness. Officer Jason Moore with Huntsville Police Department. He still works there. Mm-hmm. He worked third shift. This was a few years ago. And he responded to a domestic violence call. And it ended up in a standoff with the male individual they were dealing with. And that male individual was standing on his house front porch with 2 long guns pointed at the ground. Now, Officer Moore was a SWAT officer, so he had a little bit more training than your average police officer, and he had his rifle trained on the individual, waiting for the slightest shoulder movement to pick up that furtive action to defend his life of the weapons coming up on him. And that concept is action versus reaction. So if I'm Parker and you're Ben, you've got your gun trained on me, okay?
Right.
You tell me when am I a threat to you? You tell me when I'm going to shoot you. Bam.
And yeah,
you're not going to pick that up even with your gun on me. Cause Ben and I both went through FBI survival school dealing with officer safety, dealing with this exact scenario. And we use simunition guns, which are basically, it's like paintball. And the officer had their gun pointed at the bad guy who had their gun like this. And guess who got the shot off every time first? The bad guy.
The bad guy.
Because the bad guy knows when he's going to do it. The officer doesn't know. So the officer has to wait. The officer thinks they have to wait, but they don't have to, because Graham versus Connor, which also wasn't allowed in, clearly states an officer does not have to wait for the beat of a weapon to be pointed at them to use deadly force. So Jason's testimony, he was shot in the face because he reacted too slowly. Thankfully it was only birdshot and it wasn't, you know, he didn't die from it. He did have some effects from it, but it wasn't life threatening. And so he became a police academy instructor. He instructed Ben's class as well as several academy classes after Ben's in the concept of action versus reaction. The jury wasn't allowed to hear that.
That's incredible to me because I've dealt with stories like this, very similar. I wouldn't say suicide by cop, but years ago I covered a story on Ramos and Compion. They were Border Patrol agents. One of them defended himself, and it went even further that I'm not going to go into that whole story, but he did. And he said what happened was that the drug runner had turned on him and he saw what he believed to be a weapon in the drug runner's hand. He shot at the drug runner, right? The drug runner kept going over the border, disappeared, and then later came back to sue him. It was a huge story. Mm-hmm. Eventually, after 2 years of covering this story, I mean, they were convicted, 12 and 13 years in prison. I spent 2 years covering the story with some other folks in Congress. And on the very last day of President Bush's term in office, he commuted their sentences and they were released. But ever since that story, ever since that story and all of the other stories, and we saw what was happening with police officers, the riots, the lies being spewed about officers by radical leftists, or, you know, BLM riots and Antifa riots and the burning down of cities. We saw what happened after George Floyd. There was this enormous backlash against law enforcement.
Yeah.
Does this have something to do with that? Because I've read through your husband's story, and I can't conceptualize how a jury could not see that this man was defending his life. Now, there were some very important aspects that you had just mentioned that were not allowed during that trial. Mm-hmm. But still, do you think that, I mean, this is endemic of kind of like that rise of anti-police that we've seen across the country, both politically and with these special interest groups?
Yeah. So again, Ben's incident happened in April of 2018. He wasn't tried until May of 2021 after George Floyd incident. So you had 2 years of, you know, everyone hates cops because, quote, all cops are bad, which is not true. During jury selection, which wasn't allowed to be open to the public, again, a violation of his rights, the prosecution said, they asked the question, and I have it in the transcript, how many of you believe there's a war on cops? And Ben said, everyone raised their hand. He went on to further say, how many of you believe there are bad apples in law enforcement, like Derek Chauvin and Ben Darby? The only thing that makes them the same person is they're both cops. That's the only
right
thing that connects them. They're totally two totally separate incidents. And Ben said that when that question was asked, everyone just kind of looked around the room like, did he really just ask that? And Ben said that one of the females in the voir dire motioned at Ben like, hello, this is a war against him. You know, I mean, she didn't audibly say that, but her actions, Ben said, that's what he got out of that. Just the cards were stacked against him from the get-go. You know, like those things I mentioned, the jury wasn't allowed to hear that he was cleared by Huntsville Police Department and by the Incident Review Board. They weren't allowed to hear that. They weren't allowed to hear that the other two officers were disciplined and sent to remedial training. Ben was not sent to remedial training or disciplined. They weren't allowed to hear that. They weren't allowed to hear case law that backs Ben, specifically Graham versus Connor, which I spoke about, 11th Circuit case law, which is where Alabama is in the circuits, with Montute versus Carr and Grzynski versus Palm Beach Sheriff's Office. One of those cases namely talks about looking at it from the officer's perspective that used the force. Ben was not allowed to give the defense of why he did what he did. The prosecutors wouldn't allow his objective reasonableness to be viewed. They viewed it through Officer Pegues, the female who, you know, if it wasn't for Ben, would probably be dead today because she wasn't defending herself. They said, well, she wasn't afraid of getting hurt. She said she had the situation under control. She said it was okay. Ben just, you know, ran in there like a cowboy and made the situation worse. And that's the exact opposite. Yes, he did get in there quickly because it was a crisis situation. She wasn't protecting herself, and he saw that she wasn't doing that. And, you know, people are like, well, he could have pulled her out, or he could have done this, or he could have done that. Well, Joe Citizen, I'd like to see you put in that situation and see how you would react. Because A, you're not a trained police officer. B, if you were to do that, who's got a gun on Parker just in case he does go like this? Because guess what? Now they're both dead because Ben's trying to get her out of the house with no cover or concealment because she decided to walk into a house for no reason.
That's absolutely true. And then the backlash would be like you didn't protect her.
Right.
It would be between a rock and a hard place, right? Because do I take the weapon out and do I defend myself the way I've been trained to do? Do I stand back and wait in case, you know, either they decide to blow their brains out or kill the person in front of me, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then I'm getting blamed for that because I didn't react fast enough.
Right.
You know, I think you bring up so many important points here in this, because I think people really need to start thinking about what law enforcement puts themselves in every single day. And I, I really feel like over the past few years, like people have forgotten the kind of sacrifices that our law enforcement officers have to, and every single day you have, you're rolling the dice. You don't know if you're going to run into someone like this. I have to be honest, a lot of people that I've talked to, law enforcement officers on the border, law enforcement officers working, you know, federal law enforcement officers, they are at the point where some of them have said, I've retired on the job. I am not, you know, your husband did his duty and look at the price that he is paying, right?
When his conviction came out, when they decided that he was guilty, I can tell you for a fact, because I'm friends with people at his department, policing stopped in Huntsville because they just got the message, if you defend yourself, we're not going to back you. Madison County District Attorney's Office is not going to back officers, which is in direct contrast, because in 2019, Huntsville was involved in a shooting. It was another suicide by cop scenario. And the officers did exactly as they were trained to do. It was the Crystal Raglan shooting. If people want to look it up, she lived in an apartment complex. She was waving a gun around, popping shots. The apartment manager called. Huntsville arrived, knocked on the door correctly. They didn't go in the house. They knocked on the door and took cover behind them. She comes out and they see a gun in her waistband. They can see the butt of the pistol hanging out. They give her commands, put your hands up, keep them up. She walks towards them. All she does is this, going towards the gun, never gets her hand on it. And they smoke her, justifiably, because she's going for a weapon. They're not, they were never charged. They were never put through the ringer like my husband has been for the last 4 years. They're not sitting in prison. They shouldn't be. But what's the difference? What's the difference, Madison County? Why is that okay? But Ben Darby's incident, where the guy actually has a gun in his hand and is pointing it at you, that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But the other guys are okay. And for all your listeners, don't get me wrong. I'm not condemning those Huntsville officers because they did the right thing. But why Madison County DA? What's the difference? Because Ben's stuck in prison.
Yeah, what's the double standard here?
You got a double standard. What is your vendetta against my husband?
What do you think it is? What do you think was happening at that moment with the prosecutors? Was this political? Was this like, I'm going to make a statement by hanging Ben out to dry? I mean, because honestly, that's what I hear from federal law enforcement. When I've seen it happen, and I told you, I've seen it happen on the border. A good friend of mine, Gary Brugman, was pardoned in an incident that didn't even involve shooting someone. It involved holding somebody down, not choking them or anything, like putting them down and keeping them down. It was a civil rights violation. And they ended up spending 2 years in prison for that. And then they were pardoned under President Trump. But what do you think is going on here when they took your husband, being the prosecutor, and decided we're going to press charges against him, even though everybody else, including the chief of police, said, look, this guy did exactly what he was supposed to do. He did exactly what he was trained to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if, like I said, the DA's office was involved in his review board that cleared him. So initially they cleared him, and then 4 months later, no, we're charging him with murder. Yeah, I think it's political. I think there's personal bad blood between Chief McMurray and Rob Broussard, the DA. I don't know the exact details of that because Chief hasn't shared that with me, but just having the conversations I have had with him, there's something going on there, and he's no longer the chief anymore. He retired this past spring. So he's been able to advocate for Ben more than he was able to still as the active chief. But there's something going on between HPD and the DA's office. I don't know what it is. You know, I don't know if they're using Ben as a scapegoat, because at the time he was a newer officer. At the time we were both only 18 months on the job, but that doesn't mean that we don't know what we're doing. You can't judge Ben with his experience against Piggy Serbeckles, who never went through the officer survival school that the FBI teaches to law enforcement. They don't have that training. Ben was also just
and 25 years and yeah, 25 yeah. years.
Yeah. So you
I
go
don't
from,
understand that
you go from, we're not going to, we're just fire him and we won't press charges, to no custody time. 5 years probation, so you can be at your house, to we go to sentencing. Sentencing was a joke. We had 72 character witness letters written on Ben's behalf, pleading with the judge to be lenient and to not sentence him to an excessive sentence. So the minimum was 20 years, meaning if he got just 20, not 20 in a day, but if he got just 20, he would be eligible for an appeal bond, which would allow him to be home out on bond like he was before the trial. We go to sentencing and the chief prosecutor says, Judge, Ben Darby has not been remorseful at all for his actions, and we suggest at least a 25-year sentence. But we're happy if you do more than that. So we go from get him off the street and fire him to at least 25 years. Tell me how that's not personal.
How has your life been since this? I mean, Keelan, I mean, it can't be. I mean, it's got to be horrible. I mean, that the man that you love, that you're married to, is sitting in prison when his, I mean, you and him are, your lives were about protecting and being, you know, of service to your community. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's going through your mind when you look at the justice system and what's happened here with your husband? And I mean, how do you deal with that? I mean, I'm guessing talking about it, fighting for him on the outside, but what's it been like for you personally?
Yeah, it's been hard. I guess that's an understatement, but it's been difficult. Especially, I wasn't allowed to see him for 9 months when he was taken into custody. So he would call me when he was allowed. But depending at what facility he was at, he would be locked up for 3 to 4 days, 5 days at a time. And he wouldn't be allowed to make a phone call. So as a wife who, you know, we've been married for, it'll be 6 years this October, you spend every day with them. You walk our dog. We go to the store. We go to church. We'll go to a ball game. We'll fix, you know, stuff on the car. Do, you know, just that everyday life that we had. And to have it stripped from us both unjustly, you know, and then for him to have to pay for it, for going to prison for a crime he didn't commit. It's been difficult, you know, by the grace of God, I've been able to push forward, and, I'm resolved to fight for him until the day that I die or until the day that he is freed. What was done to him was malicious. And to me, it's obvious. To others, it's obvious. I mean, we have nationwide support, honestly, worldwide support of people who see this for what it is, that he did exactly as he was trained to do. And he's paying the price for it.
Have any other groups spoken out on your husband's behalf? What organizations are helping you with this?
Yeah, so from the very beginning, the Blue Justice Project is out of Pennsylvania. They have supported Ben from the day that they found out about it in 2018. They've been by our side. Most recently, we've had the Pipe Hitter Foundation, which I'm sure you're very aware with the military background, but Eddie Gallagher was a Navy SEAL.
Yeah, of course.
He was wrongfully charged with a war crime and put into prison during pretrial negotiations. And he was ultimately acquitted. And that was, you know, that whole situation resolved. But Ben and I follow the Pipe Hitter Foundation from the beginning, hearing about Eddie's story. And just so many, we feel so many similarities between how Ben has been treated and to how Eddie was treated. And we reached out to them, and they said, hey, we want to support you guys and help you out as much as we can. And they've been a huge help to us, just financially, just giving us wisdom through the legal process, because this has never been an issue in Alabama. A law enforcement officer has never been convicted of murder for carrying out his official capacity. They've never been criminally held liable for doing their job. And so we really don't have anyone to turn to in the state, because this has never happened before here. It's happened in other states, and those states have sided with the officer and seen it through the officer's perspective that they were using justified force. But the National Fraternal Order of Police, they back Ben. they wrote an amicus brief to defer his appeal. And it was a 32 page brief stating why he should be given another trial and why a case law should have been applied, how it was an error that the judge made by not allowing Graham versus Connor and several other cases to not be heard to the jury because they exonerate what Ben did.
What is the next step? I mean, where do you go from here?
Yeah, so we're in the appeal process right now. We filed our initial paperwork February 1st. So they've had our initial brief. Now that it's at the state courts, the Alabama Attorney General's office is now the prosecutor. So that would be Steve Marshall's office. A week after Ben was sentenced, the Attorney General was in Huntsville, and I went to hear his, he had a speech there for, it was a Back the Blue event, and he was the keynote speaker. So I went to it, hoping to get a couple minutes to talk with him. And I was able to speak with him, and I just introduced myself, told him who Ben was. And I said, I know that you're now prosecuting his case, your office is. I said, I need you to do the right thing and back cops like you say that you do as your platform, because he's running for re-election. And I gave him, we have these cards, and I gave him a card. And Huntsville chief was right there, and he came over and started talking to us. And the attorney general stopped, and he looked at me, and he said, you're a cop too? And I said, yes, sir, I am. I said, so this doesn't just affect me personally because Ben's my husband, but when I go to work tonight and I get into a shooting, I could end up in prison for doing my job just like he did. And the attorney general was well aware of Ben's case, obviously, because he's prosecuting it. But we're at the Court of Criminal Appeals right now. The attorney general's office filed their reply to our brief back in March. And then we were able to file our final brief at the end of April. So the courts have had all this stuff collectively since April. They have yet to make a decision. They make decisions on Fridays. So within the next couple hours, I'll be checking the website to see and hoping for a phone call from our lawyers. But they have no deadline. So we had a deadline, and so did the AG's office, on submitting all of our briefs. But the courts don't have a deadline. So they could decide on it today, or they could decide on it, you know, next August 26th. There's no pressure for them to make a decision. We're hopeful.
What about a pardon? What about a pardon from the governor?
So in Alabama, yeah, they can't do that. We had a previous governor who got into some trouble, and he was trying to pardon himself. And so the legislator stripped that power away from the governor. So if Ben were to get a pardon, it would have to come through the Board of Pardon and Paroles, but it would also have to come through the district attorney and the judge who convicted him. I don't see them going back on their word, because that's going to make them look bad. So
Right. So this has to go through the appeal process.
Yeah. I mean, a pardon is possible, but it would be a very tough road, I think, to do that. So we're going through the appeals process. And, you know, I pray every day, along with many other people, that a decision is made quickly. But we are, I'm hoping that all this press that I'm able to get now that I'm allowed to talk about Ben's case, because when he was first arrested, there was a gag order issued by the judge. So we weren't allowed to talk about this, because if we did, then I would be going to jail too. And we don't need both of us. We don't need both of us.
Right. No, we certainly don't. And I think he needs you to fight for him on the outside. And we want to do that too. What can we do to support your husband, all of our listeners, me and you, in this process? Can we write letters? Can we help with what is it that we can do for you in this process, in fighting back?
Yeah. So obviously this is a huge financial burden, on myself and my family. So, we have some fundraisers set up through Pipe Hitter Foundation. You can go to pipehitterfoundation.org, and they have a donor set up where you can donate to that. I also have a website, standwithdarby.com. The donation profile is also on that, but it tells people about Ben's story. It shows the court documents that I've referenced, why Ben should not be in prison and why he's innocent. If people want to write the appellate court, they can do that. I'm getting that up on our website, hopefully by this weekend. With my schedule, it's working as a cop by night and fighting for my husband by day. And
that's what I was just going to say. You're still a cop. You're still out there doing your job.
Yeah. Yeah. I work night shift patrol. So, I work tonight actually.
Well, God bless you.
Yeah. It's busy, but,
God bless you. I'm sure.
If people can, you know, donations are obviously helpful. Pray, people who pray and, have a relationship with God in that way, you know, we need all the prayers that we can get. Just the fact if people were to talk about his case, because so many people don't know about what happened to him. Just talk about his case, you know, when you go out to eat or, you know, whatever it is that you do. Hey, do you know who Ben Darby is? Start that conversation. Write our senators, Tommy Tuberville. You know, you can write the governor. We had someone do that, and she directed them to speak with the Board of Pardons and Paroles. People can do that too. Like I said, it's not an impossible thing for him to get pardoned. It's just going to be an uphill battle because I don't see the DA or the judge saying, hey, I screwed this up, you know, because that's going to go against their pride. So I don't see that happening as likely. But, you know, any help we can get, you having me on to speak about his case is huge because you have a very big outreach. You know, you stretch a far way and people hear and listen to you, and in turn, they're hearing this story. So anything like that.
Well,
would
I'm
going to
make sure of it. I'm going to make sure of it. We're going to have all, if you could send all those websites to me, and I'll give you all my contact information.
Yeah.
And we can stay in touch. And I've got a lot of friends. I've got a lot of friends that are cops. I've got a lot of law enforcement friends, and I'm going to make sure that they all know about it. And, you know, when they're having their events or anything, that they, maybe they can get involved in writing letters and getting the word out. Maybe we start out with t-shirts. Who is Ben Darby? Do you know Ben Darby? Mm-hmm. And we get his name out there. Let's do that. Right. Because I think for too long we have allowed, you know, and we've allowed people to really harm our police and law enforcement community. And especially we've seen that, I think, across the board in our country. It's so tragic, especially when you know that so many of you, just like you are tonight, you know, going out on the front lines of some of the most dangerous situations and not getting the respect or not being backed up the way you need to be backed up. And I definitely hear at my show, and I know everyone, all the producers, were just fascinated by this story because it was just so unbelievable what your husband has been through and what you have been through as a family. So we're going to be here for you, and we're going to get the word out. Everybody, talk about Ben Darby. Look at his case. Here's his wife, who I pronounced her name a million times wrong.
It's okay.
Keelan.
Keelan.
I'm going to do it right this. Yeah, Keelan.
Yep.
Keelan, I'm going to be here for you, and we are going to fight this fight along with you, okay?
Thank you so much.
You're not
going
to be alone.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. I just want everybody out there who's listening to this podcast today to share it. Please share this podcast so that we get Ben Darby's name out there. Let's do this, me and you together. It's about all of us. I say that every time on every podcast. It's about each and every one of us doing our job and standing up for one another. Let's do it for Ben Darby, because someday we might need somebody to do that for us.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let me tell you, if there's a surefire way to wake up feeling fresh after a night of drinking, it's with ZBiotics. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in your gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day.
ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Every time I have ZBiotics before drinks, I notice a difference the next day. Even after a night out, I can confidently plan on waking up with a smile on my face, ready to face the day. Go to ZBiotics.com/radio, R-A-D-I-O, to get 15% off your first order when you use radio, R-A-D-I-O, at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're ever unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. That's ZBiotics.com/RADIO radio and use the code radio, R-A-D-I-O, at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times. Okay, before we wrap this up, I want you to listen to this speech by the winner of the Democratic Party for a New York State Senate seat. You are not going to believe this. This candidate's name is Kristen Gonzalez. I think this will shock you. It will shock you. But this is actually where our Democratic Party is right now in the year 2022. Listen to this.
I know we're saving the speeches for a little later, but today we really proved that socialism wins. We are not going anywhere, and we will not stop until we see a socialist state across this city.
I can't believe what idiots live in New York, how they're so easily brainwashed and that they can talk about this openly. You know, I think a lot of this is like what the communists would call the useful idiots. It's very common in, you know, the old Soviet times and even now in Russia, and our enemies use it all the time. They call people like this useful idiots because they can manipulate them into believing anything. You all know that my mother was from Cuba, my family on my mom's side. Under Fidel Castro, their lives were completely turned upside down. She escaped and left Cuba on the Johnson Freedom Flights in the 1960s. It was the most difficult time for my family. And some of my family is still left behind. And, you know, I can tell you this. They do not live in this balanced splendor or this communist idea of everybody's equal. That is not what goes on there. There is poverty. They are kept in shackles, literally, because if you speak out against the government, you're taken into custody. You know, all of this talk of socialism leads to only one thing: the government controlling you and your life and the lives of your children. Think about what happened under COVID, times that by 1,000. And that is life under socialism. I wouldn't be cheering that. The only thing I want to fight for really is my family, my country, and freedom number one. Freedom. That is the most important thing that we can hold on to. Our liberty to be free from tyranny. Why do we want to give that up? Do we really need babysitters? Do we really need somebody to watch over us 24/7, pay our bills, and leave us locked up in the house? Really? Is that what people want? I don't think so. So I think when I hear those people cheering on, you know, Miss Kristen Gonzalez and her talk about socialism, I just think they're so misinformed. And if they are socialists, well, they're more than welcome to leave the United States of America. We're a free nation. They can hop on a plane and see how life is like in Cuba, in China, in Korea. Why don't they go to North Korea? There's a lot of places in the world where they can experience true communism, true dictatorship, true socialism. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sarah Carter Show. It's so great to be with all of you. I love this. I love this format. Follow me on Twitter at Sarah Carter DC and on Instagram at S Carter DC. God bless you. God bless our great nation, and God bless the great state of Texas.
To Today, I'm joined by Rebecca Weber, the CEO of the Association for Mature American Citizens. It's also known as AMAC. Explain the differences. What makes AMAC superior to AARP beyond the fact that we don't agree with their leftist ideology?
What makes us so unique is that we truly do take our marching orders from our membership. Before we go out and about and advocate for any issue, we do consult with our AMAC members, and we do that through a variety of ways. But that really makes us very different. Where AARP stood in support of Obamacare, even though their membership was largely against, AMAC will stand in support of our membership. In addition, Sarah, we offer benefits. We offer benefits just like the AARP. Ours are better because we offer choices. For example, you can call AMAC for your Medicare, and we're not going to do a one-size-fits-all, one plan. The AARP endorses United Healthcare, whereas AMAC has its own trusted in-house licensed insurance advisors that are working for AMAC, stand for our mission of faith, family, and freedom, and then go about offering real choices. We do a lot of things like that that I think make us very different and make us, quite frankly, better.
Rebecca, thanks so much for being with me today. I'm honored to have you and AMAC as a sponsor for The Sarah Carter Show. You know, for more information, folks, visit amac.us/Carter.
Hey guys, we know it's hard to keep up with all the news these days, but don't worry because we're here to talk and laugh about it all. Brian Stelter is lost after getting canceled from CNN. The Inflation Reduction Act is being pushed by greedy Democrats, and Liz Cheney has lost it and thinks she could be a contender in 2024. Hey, it's the Chicks from the Chicks on the Right podcast. Download and subscribe to our daily podcast to hear us pick apart and pick on the news of the day. Politics to pop culture, nobody's safe, but it's all fun. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.